Once again, it's good to be with you. Certainly appreciate the fact that you have taken us in for the week to share with us your fellowship and your friendship, and that we can extend that fellowship. And we certainly appreciate the fact that you have been so gracious to us. It's an extra burden on you for me to bring my two sons with me, but it does us a lot of good, and I hope it does them a lot of good, as I'm sure it will. They make friends. They've got friends all over the country, and they enjoy that and enjoy traveling with me, as do I enjoy having them with me. Last evening, as already was announced, we started in Luke chapter 15. If you weren't here, I'll bring you up to speed. Luke chapter 15 will be our primary text for the evening. Jesus is in response to a thought or an assertion that that the Pharisees and the scribes had in verses 1 tells us that the publicans and the sinners drew near to Christ, and Christ was eating a common meal with them. And he responds to what they had to say. They slandered him because he was in the presence of people that were of lesser quality, if you would, than they expected him to be. So when God came to the earth in the flesh, he did not react as men thought he would. He reacted by seeking those which were lost, and those which needed his protection, and those which needed his care. And he uses three parables to respond to these people in regards to that. The first one, obviously, was about sheep, but there's a pattern that you'll find throughout all three of these. It's always one that's being talked about. And I can't emphasize that enough. You know, so many times we feel that God would have given, you know, a sacrifice for the whole world. Or maybe God would have given sacrifice for, you know, the people that were good, as we think. But to give his life and to come and do what he did just for me, you know, we don't feel like God would be willing to do that. And that's what really Jesus is talking about. He is trying to emphasize to these, if you will, religious people of the day, at least. They thought they were religious. Jesus said, you are white and sepulchers. You are a tomb that's been painted, and you look good on the outside, but you're rotten to the core on the inside. And he knew that he couldn't reach those people. You know, there are people all around us that we can't reach because they are satisfied with where they are. They feel that they can make it on their own. They're too proud to need God. They're too proud to need anybody to give them anything, especially salvation. And so, therefore, they can't be reached. They're satisfied with what they do. They think they'll be able to surmount enough good deeds in this life that God surely can't dismiss that. So, without Christ, of course, we are going to be lost. The whole book of Romans is designed to tell us just that. Paul starts out by telling us in the book of Romans that, you know, we are a mess. That as humans, we have been separated from God, and as a creator, he loves us so that he made a way for us to get back. And he addresses that in the first five chapters, and in the sixth chapter, he tells us it's exactly what we talked about Sunday night, that Jesus was our representative man. He, through his death and life and his resurrection, he established for us a new creation. We can be part of that creation. The whole world can be part of that creation. And that's the gospel. And the blood that was shed on the cross, the word blood in the Bible always refers to life. You take the blood out of something, you're taking the life out of it. So when you see that, it means something gave its life. So to contact that life, that representative life, Jesus lived in a way that you and I can. He lived sinless. In order to be in the presence of God, we have to be sinless. And when I stand before the throne of God, as will you as a Christian, then you will be sinless. A lot of people have a problem with that. They can't get that through their head. They think that, man, I've got enough good deeds over here on the balance scale. They outweigh my bad deeds, and God will take me. That's not the point. We're going to be sinless, and we are sinless. We have trouble with that. We're not sinless because of our deeds. If you want to read the rest of Romans, you'll find that out. We're sinless because his life covers my life. I'll stand before the throne of God just as clean and white as Christ, because Christ is going to be what the Lord sees instead of me. Thank God for that. Because if he saw me, he'd see a mess. But if he did see it, it's going to have Jesus' blood all over it. And so I'm atoned through his sacrifice. That sacrifice has to be gotten into your life. And that's what you and I, as the church, has to prepare to fail people. We have to explain it to them. We just can't fail people. You've got to be baptized for the mission you sin. That's the truth. But why? Why be dumped underwater? You know, people in this world in the past 2 days can't relate to that. You know, when you can drive up to a window and get your meal, as many people do, and they've forgotten how to cook at home, like the cooking that I've had far too much of already this week, they lose that. And we're in a fast food world. You know, when people want to be sprinkled, they want to be squirted with a gun or something. They don't want to be dumped under the water. That's far too inconvenient. People aren't going to do that. And unless we can explain why this inconvenience has to take place in people's lives, better than just to say you've got to be baptized for the remission of your sin. That, nevertheless, that is the truth. But why? Why should we be baptized? You know, in our Spanish services in Owen, young man, we have one member. We have about 20 of them that will come. One of them is a member, and we're struggling to try to get more. But a young man had asked the question, and his question was, I've been baptized. You know, it was a totally different situation. But he says, why doesn't it apply the same as here? So why don't it? What's the difference in a denominational baptism? And even if they're dumped under the water and ours. And do you know how to explain that? And can you explain it in a way that it puts us under the blood of Christ? And under the sacrifice which was made for our sins, under the substitutionary life that puts it into me. So you see, the history that Jesus has becomes the history that I have, just the same as we talked about David and Goliath. You know, the history, what David did on the battlefield with Goliath became representative, and it became the same for all of Israel. They all shared in his victory, even though it was just one man. And because you and I can contact the blood through baptism, we can share in his victory. His victory becomes ours. He's our representative. He done for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. And so that satisfied the justice of God. Sin had to be punished, and it was punished on the cross. Your sin, my sin, he atoned for everything, paid for everything, took the payment. That's the thing. God just didn't step aside and said, all humans will be human. It had to be paid, and it was. And that's what the cross was all about. So what I'm trying to teach you in this lesson and tonight, last night, is the fact that Jesus was quite human. He suffered exactly the way we do. And this chapter, the 15th chapter of Luke, is, in my estimation, the best place in the Bible to find exactly how God looks at you and me, because these people that he has lined out and the things that he's talked about, we talked last night about a coin of a lady lost, which had no significance whatsoever to the world. It had no worth to amount to anything as far as people viewed it. But the lady that lost it, it was a wedding token that she had received. And it meant a lot to her. It meant all to her. All so much that she tore it out to all the pieces and found it. When she found it, she called her friends together to rejoice over a 44-cent piece that she had lost. And if you read that, you think, why would you rejoice and why would you call people together over something so insignificant? And that's what he was trying to tell the Pharisees, as he said. You look at these people that I'm sitting and eating with and you call them insignificant and worthless. I call them worth enough to die for. And he explained that to them. He says it has value that you can't understand. And tonight is the, I would say, the pinnacle of his parables. You know, you're going to find yourself in this, and you're going to find the love of God in this, and you're going to find the way you think in this, and the way humans think in this. You're going to see just about every aspect of humanity listed in this group here. There's a lot of things you get to see. Yeah, first of all, we typically call it the prodigal son. Prodigal means wasteful or extravagant or somebody who uses time or means or energy unwisely. You know, you're going to find that the father in this was extravagant. His love was just lavished all over. It accepted, you know, and this flew in the face of the people that listened, because when you really understand how they thought, it's said, and I think it's so, that the Pharisees already had a story like this, and Jesus played on that, and I don't doubt that. They already understood this parable, but it was different at the end. The son got to come back, but he had to work all of his life to earn his father's acceptance, which he never really got in the first place. Now, it was the same until it got down to the end of it, and if that's the case, Jesus changed the whole end of it. and it totally threw them for a loop. But you're going to get to see exactly how God views us as humanity, because there couldn't have been a lower form of a human on the face of the earth than what Jesus thinks this young man up to be in the sight of the Jews. Now, for you and I, as we look at this, it may not mean a whole lot, but that's what I want to do, is explain to you exactly what it meant to the people that listened, so that you can understand God's love, which is what exactly Jesus wanted us to see. And both of these sons, he had two sons. He actually had two rebellious sons. They were both rebellious. One stayed at home, and one went away. So you can gain a lot from that, because we still, we find people that are sitting in the pews of the church that never have understood the love of God. They never have really got to it. Neither one of these sons understood at all the love that the father had for him. You can see that in the second son, in the end of this parable, but neither one of them had a clue about the love of his father. Even when the young man, it says in this parable, he came to himself. Now, when we get to that point, if I fail to remind you of it, when it says he came to himself, it didn't mean that he came to himself and realized that his father loved him. That's not it at all. He came to himself and thought, there's people at my house that's eating better, or eating, and I'm not eating at all. And so he got up to go back to make a business transaction with his father. He didn't go back home. He wasn't going home at all. He was headed in that direction, but he wasn't going home. He had no intention of it. We'll see that when we get to it. But nevertheless, let's read the first few verses here. So Jesus, in response, by the way, I forgot to tell you last night that the second parable is the only one of those parables that was an inanimate object. It had no way. As a matter of fact, the coin didn't even know it was lost. It was lost so close to where it originated, so close it was lost within a little house. If you knew anything about Hebrew houses, I mean, they were in a oppression, and it was at best a small room. So this place that you tore all the pieces wouldn't be like one of our houses. It was so close. And it didn't even know it was lost. Only the person that owned it even knew that it existed or that it was even lost. There's so many people in this world, especially in our society, it's sad. Truth all around. Truth just everywhere. I mean, there's somebody told me on the porch that there's six churches in this vicinity in the same way where I grew up. And the truth is abounds. So many people lost right there next to the truth. They don't even know it. So many people are satisfied with exactly where they are. They don't even realize it. And only the Creator, only the owner of those people know that they're lost, because they don't. And Him alone, many times, is the one that is trying to seek them and to save them. He does that through you and me. And our job is to prepare ourselves while we're here, like times in this week, and to prepare ourselves, get the energy and the motivation to go and do our job and be ambassadors for Christ as He's called us to be. So, as he starts out here, this is his third response to their accusations of him. And he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of the good that falls to me. And he divided unto them his living. Now, first of all, if you want to go back into the law, Deuteronomy and Leviticus, you're going to find that it was not to be, that a man's wealth was not to be parted into his children until he was passing from this world. That was to ensure the fact that he would be have a stable income, he'd have something to live on. That was all he had. And if he had parted it, if both of his sons had done what the one did, then he would have been out. He would have had no way to finish his life. That was not to be done. It was actually in the law of Moses that was the case. You were not to part your goods. So what he did, what this young man was saying, that, again, the people that were listening understood fully what we were about to say, so you didn't have to be explained to them, but because of culture differences, we have to understand some things that's going on behind the scenes. And so this young man, in essence, was saying, you know, I can't wait for you to kick off, and I'd like to have what's coming to me right now. And that's exactly what he was saying, because he shouldn't have asked, he shouldn't have received his inheritance until his father's death. But he said, I can't wait around for you to die. I want to go enjoy what is coming to me now. And so his father, in his love, gave him what he asked for. Now, there's a whole lot behind this, because many people in life, and I have been down parts of these roads myself, you know, sometimes until we go down certain roads, we really can't end up back where we need to be. And God lets us go through a lot in many cases just to bring us back to where He knows we'll end up if we go down a certain road. You know, this young man, that he's about to give this money, and y'all know the story. He's read it millions of times and had sermons on it before, I'm sure. He goes and wastes his money, and you know that. But could the father have went while he was out there in the bars with the women and kicking up his heels? Could this man have gone and said, "Son, you're wasting your life. Come on back home"? How do you think he would have reacted to that? Would it work, would it? Or what about when he was out there and feeding the pigs before he ever came around and realized what was going on and said, "Son, if you'll just come home"? Pride. Pride gets us, you know, it's awful. Pride keeps us from doing so many things, from saying I'm sorry, to saying I love you, to repenting, to making up, to patching up situations. Pride is another thing, it's the original sin. And God is showing us through this parable that this young man had to go through what he went through for him to come to a position to where he was willing to receive the love that God had for him. So many times, you know, that we find ourselves on our knees, we find ourselves in despair, and then we're willing to listen to what God has to say. We're willing to seek out God. How many things in life could we avoid if we just chose not to go waste everything? And God didn't have to let us go down certain paths to make us be willing to listen. And this young man was willing to listen. He was willing to receive, and he was willing to accept. I'm not sure he understood why or how. Didn't really matter. But he came to grips with it. But it's an interesting story and comical in places. So he gave him his living. And in verse 13, "And not many days after, the young son gathered all together, as we would expect, and took a journey into a far country, and there he wasted his substance with riotous living." And not that it makes any difference in the world, but the far country probably was just not too far down the road. Because the far country insinuated that it was a Gentile family, and you're going to see that by the fact that there's pigs. You know, in the Old Testament, in many places it says, you know, "Entreat those that are within your gates and those who are far off." What that meant, Gentile people. It didn't mean that they were from some way distant land. He was down the road. His brother knew what he'd done with his money all the time. He said, "This son of yours is wasted. You're living with heartless. Riotous living," he said. So he knew what he'd done. So evidently he was close enough that he knew what had gone on. Or he just suspected it. But nevertheless, he wasted it all the same. You see, when life is good, you got lots of things, you can buy a friend. You see, that's what this boy was really trying to do. He didn't understand that his father had this love for him that he did. So he's out trying to buy. So many people in life try to buy happiness, and it just can't be bought. I mean, you can spend and spend and spend, and you can buy and buy and buy, and you're never going to be able to buy enough to make you happy. And the person that isn't satisfied with a little ain't going to be satisfied with a lot. And the quicker we can learn that in this society that teaches us that we need everything, the better off we'll be. So he's out trying to buy what he thought he couldn't find at home, and he's acceptance and love you know, the pat on the back. But I can't imagine that this young man didn't have that, because this father wasn't always this way. The Bible doesn't say that he was different and changed when his son left. He was always that way. He left the home of love looking for love and couldn't find it and came back and realized he left what he was always looking for. Verse 14. "And when he had, and we had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in the land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into the fields to feed swine." Now, if you, that would have curled their toenails, because this was as low as you could get. You go back and read Deuteronomy, and you'll find that, you know, when he gives a list of unclean animals, that you couldn't even touch animals without being ceremonially unclean. Now, you know, to be around them is one thing. To touch them was quite another. To feed them and ensure their survival in this world is a whole different situation. Now, you'll find that this young man was barefoot. He didn't have clothes on to amount to much. And so he goes and begins to feed swine. Now, you'll find in Deuteronomy that was a taboo thing. Now, what made the swine the ultimate temptation in the food list of Deuteronomy to a Jew was the fact that it was good. You know, I've been fed pork two or three times since I'm here. It's one of my favorite meats. You know, you go through and read all the stuff that you find in Deuteronomy that you can't eat, like owls and I think it comes across buzzards and eagles and snakes, and who cares? I mean, who wants to eat a buzzard? Who wants to eat an owl? But a pig is a whole different story. It's a whole different story. It was the temptation. You see, they loved it, they wanted it, and it was a temptation. You're not going to tempt somebody with a turkey buzzard. It just ain't going to happen. But a pig is quite different. You know, that's why you see it popping up. That's why you see such a big deal. Because it's really the only food that amounted to anything in the book of the law that they couldn't eat, that they really wanted to. So, nevertheless, Jesus is painting this boy up. First of all, he's rebellious. He told his father he'd just soon be dead because he'd like to have what he had coming to him. Now he's gone out and wasted all of that. This was the money that his father had to live on for the rest of his life, and it would have been his inheritance and what his father had worked all of his life to get, and he gave to this boy, and he went and blew it in a matter of a short period of time. Now he's out feeding pigs, which to a Jew was just about as low as you could have got. And now, if you see that the state that Jesus has painted before these people that this young man is, now he's going to get to see how he felt about himself, and he's going to get to flip it around on us, because oftentimes we feel this way. We may not be feeding pigs, spiritually we might be feeding pigs, but nevertheless we feel sometimes that we aren't worthy of love, and you may not feel like you are, but your Creator says you are, and your Creator says that He is looking for you, and you by yourself, one individually, one to every single one of these, one sheep, one lost coin, one lost son. Actually, he had two lost sons. He got one of them back. I think he really lost the other one. But nevertheless, you're going to see this one all the way through here. You're going to see this rejoicing in every single one of them. Call together our friends and let's make merry. Kill the fatty calf. Let's have a party. Let's have a celebration. We have gained back one person. One person. You know, you get the idea that this was the only person ever created. Like I said last night, if you were the only person ever created and you sinned, Jesus would have still died for you. That's as personal as it can get. And if that don't move you when you need to be moved, then you got a heart of stone. Let's move on. Verse 16. This tells us how he feels. And when he would have fain filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, and no man gave him, then he came to himself. And first part of verse 17. Now, give you this scenario. I mean, here you have a young Jewish man that has denied everything he's ever taught. Not only did he not want his father, he didn't want anything to do with his father. He just assumed his father would be dead if that's what it took to get his money. He's in a place and he's wasted everything his father's ever made. He's embarrassed about that. He don't have any friends anymore because the friends that he had in the first place were just hanging around because of what he had and what he could supply for him, and when that supply was gone, so were they. So he's pretty low. He's out feeding swine, which is the worst possible thing he can do, and it doesn't dawn on him that he should be anywhere else. But now, what he says, I'm so hungry that I'd like to eat what these pigs are eating, what I'm feeding these pigs. But the idea that you get is the fact that they won't let it. You know, they're not going to feed him. And the idea that you get from him that he's thinking is the fact that, you know, if I die, they could kill me. They'll just get somebody to replace me. But I got to feed these doggone pigs. Yeah. These pigs are going to have to live, but they could care less whether I die or not. The pigs are going to survive. You die, we'll get somebody else to take your place. You see, sometimes we get in such a low estate, and sometimes people do. We need to know this, because when we talk to people and they have a low self-esteem of themselves, that means they have a low self-esteem of themselves in the sight of God, in the sight of you, in the sight of everybody else. And to get to people sometimes, you've got to teach them that God can love them regardless. And we need to learn that principle in our lives as well when it comes to our brothers and our sisters and the forgiveness that we have and things that we hold against people and not willing to forgive and to move on and learn what forgiveness really is. And we may talk about that before the week is out. But this young man didn't understand, and he had an extremely low self-esteem. But then it dawned on him, like I said, and he says in verse 17, and then when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's house have bread enough to eat and to spare? And I am perishing with hunger. Now, bear in mind, he didn't say, you know, my father, just, I had so much love at home, I think I'll just go back to that. No, he didn't say that. He didn't even realize what he had. He said, I bet you that if I go back home, now you got to understand what a hired servant is, because we get the wrong idea about a hired servant in this particular passage anyway. A hired servant was more like what we call seasonal workers. It was people that you hired, like temp workers in our society. You know, you need somebody for a while, you don't want to put them on the payroll, you're going to pay them to help you do something that you can't do for yourself, or an extra workload, and you're going to pay them, they'll be gone. And that's what a temporary worker or a hired hand was. It wasn't a servant. A servant was a person that lived on the place, and they basically didn't get paid. You provided everything they needed, and you took care of them, and they had a place to live in, and you provided their food, and they did labor for you. But in certain times of the year, you needed more help than your servants could supply. So you hired temporary people. And that's what this boy is talking about. He has no intention of going back home, and you get the wrong idea if that's what you think. He knows Dad ain't going to have him back on the place, and he's not even willing to ask that. And I told you last night when Jesus gave the example about prayer, he said, I go before God and I just pour it out. I just lay it on him. And actually, if you read what it says in the Greek, he really, the only way I know how to say it is, he says, I just make a fool of him. I tell him, I'm not afraid to ask him because I know he wants to give me what I need and what I want. And the Bible says he'll even give us the desire of our heart. That means things that doesn't pertain to anything spiritual, as we would call it, just things we enjoy. And that's the kind of Father we serve, but we can't sometimes get that through our heads. So his plan is to go back and say, Dad, you know, I've messed it up really bad, I know that, I ain't asking nothing of you, except, you know, in the spring and in the, you know, in the fall, whenever you need extra help, and you go down to the marketplace, and you know how this goes. There are certain places in every city, if you need extra hands, you can go and pick them up in the morning, and you don't owe them nothing except for their day's wages. You don't even owe them lunch. But now, he says, his father, he says, I remember that he was so generous to the people that helped him. I mean, he didn't really even owe them a lunch. But he spread this table before them, and they had food. The spirit took it home with them, and doggy that. This is the kind of guy he was, even though he really didn't know it yet. So all he's saying is, Dad, look, when you need extra help, and you go to the marketplace to get somebody, would you pick me? Because I'm going to be there. And I know you're a generous man, and I know I'll have food, at least for the day. He says, all I'm asking is just look for me in the marketplace when you come to get extra help. He was not asking to be back on the place. He had no intention of being back on the place. So the boy wasn't headed home. He was headed toward home, but that was not where he was planning on going. He had no intention of it. He knew his father wouldn't have him back. I thought he wouldn't. Because he didn't understand who his father was. That's the whole point of this particular parable. We don't understand who God is. We fail to understand his love and his care and his concern for us. It does not mean that he has to have justice for sin. That was paid for on the cross. And you get that payment in full through the blood of Christ that you receive through baptism. So don't look back behind you and think about the life that you've had if you're a Christian and you have been cleansed by the blood of Christ, and don't let it hold you down, because it will. You'll look back and you'll think, oh, well, you know, God, surely he couldn't forgive me of that. Surely he couldn't. Now, I'm telling you, in the eyes of the people that were listening and the ears of the people that were listening, you could not have gotten any worse than this young man. There's nothing that you could have done in this life that would have been worse than what Jesus painted this picture. You know, he's telling the story, and he can make it do anything he wants it to do. And he's made this young man look as bad as it can possibly be for a purpose, to make us understand that if we're willing to come home, he's willing to take us. More than willing. And so he makes up this story. This is kind of comical, I think. He says, I will arise, and I'll go to my father, and I'll say to him, and he makes up this story. You know, every time we get in trouble, and as kids especially, you know, every time I get into trouble, and I know that's going to be in trouble, I think, what's going to happen? So we run it through your head, and you get this story that you're going to tell, you know, because you've anticipated what's coming. And that's exactly what he does. He's rehearsing. You can just hear him rehearsing all the way home. I'm not, you know, let's read what he says. I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and I am no longer worthy to be called thy son. Make me one of your hired servants. So you can just see, he's probably got it written on a piece of paper. He's reading all the way home. I don't want to be a hired servant. I'm not worthy to be called your son. And he rehearses it all the way home. And that's what he expects to give to his father. And that's what he's going to present. And that's what we present to God. Lord, I'll do this if you'll do that. I'll make a deal with you. How many times have you seen it? You see it on TV shows. Lord, if you'll just let me get through this. Well, God ain't in the deal-making business. That's not how it works. You know, we think we can barter and bargain and we can plead and we can pry and we can coax God into doing things, and we misunderstand who God is. You don't have to bribe. And you don't have to offer Him something in return for what He's done. That's the thing about it. He asked for a life of service, and that's all He asked for. And that service will vary depending on the person and the capabilities of the person. And Paul's crown isn't going to be any bigger than yours, no matter how you understand that. You see, a life of service in whatever way you can give. You may be a mother at home, and those I know that for a fact, because my wife homeschools our kids, and she has taken more ridicule over that than any. I never would have imagined the ridicule that a woman would take to stay home and raise her kids. That is something I just cannot understand from society and from, I'm sorry to say, even members of the church. What are you doing? Anybody that's ever had three kids, it don't take a lot of an imagination to figure out what you do all day. That's the kind of response you get. I had one woman say, well, I couldn't imagine not putting them in school. I couldn't stand being around them that long. This was her kid. Why would you have kids if that's the way you feel about it? I don't understand this. We don't understand ourselves sometimes. So he says, I'm not worthy to be called your son, and this is what he's going to tell. Make me one of your hired servants. So he rose in verse 20, and he came to his father. Now, you get the idea that this father had been looking in the same direction this boy left in since he lived. It gives you the idea that God knew we were coming back. He knew it would be in time when he could make that preparation for us, but he's been looking for it. He is searching for us, as a matter of fact. And the boy comes over the hill, and look what happens. And but when he was a great way off, his father saw him, and he had compassion. And he ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And you got to get this picture. This guy is covered in pig food. He ain't got shoes on. He barely has any kind of clothes on. And his father sees him, and he expects it's him. He really can't tell who he is, but he's certain it's him because he's been expecting him to come back anyway. He knew what he was going to do. And he knew not to go after him because he knew his reaction. He had to wait until he got in this state before he'd be willing to accept a gift like he was about to give. So he goes and runs and meets him. Now, there's things we don't understand about that. You know, have you ever seen, and forgive me, people that are older, but you don't normally see older people run. In Jewish society, you certainly didn't see older people run because it was out of character. It was not becoming of an older person to run. It was just not characteristic of that. You know, maturity came along and you was expected to be calmer and collected about situations and you didn't run. This old guy picked up his coat and away he went. He's jumping the shrubs as he leaves out of the yard. He's headed to meet this boy on the way in because of what? Well, let's look and see if he goes on. So he gets to him. Lost my place. When he was a great way off, he ran and fell on his neck. And the son said to him, here goes that rehearsed speech. Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and I am no more worthy to be called your son. Cut him off right there. You never get to hear the end of that speech. But the father said to the servant, now there was somebody with him, you know, saw this guy running out of the yard and figured something had to be wrong, so a servant runs after him. And he says to the servant, cuts him off right in the middle of his feet, bring forth the best robe and put on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let's eat and make merry. Let's celebrate. Now, you see, this young man wasn't prepared for this, but I've got some questions about what he just said. Why in the world... I mean, get this picture. He's run out to this young man, and they're about to go back home. That's where he's headed. He's fixing to take him home. You know that. So why send the servant back to get a robe? had a ring and sandals. Why don't we just take care of that when we get to the house? I mean, the boy is out in the weeds behind the bushes putting on a robe and getting dressed to go home when he could have just done it. You know, the servant followed him out and he sends the servant back home to get a robe and a ring and sandals to bring it back out there for him to put back on and then go back home. Why don't we just do it when we get home? Because the father says, you ain't going home looking like this. Because without shoes on your feet in that society, automatically meant you were a slave. Outside of Christ, we're slaves. We're slaves anyway, Paul says this, but in order to be free, the freest we can get as humans is to be a slave to Christ. But we're slaves outside of God, outside of Christ. We're a slave to our passions. We're slaves to our sins. We're slaves to everything that comes along in the world. And he says, I want this boy with a pair of shoes on when he goes home because nobody's going to ever know what has happened to him. The robe that he puts on obviously means purity. His father has accepted him back 100%, puts him right back where he's starting from, in the same position. We fell from God's grace, from God's presence in the Garden of Eden. We get placed right back in God's presence again through baptism, and we're robed in the blood of Christ. And the father says, or God says, I ain't taking you home, and everybody making fun of you. Nobody will ever know this has happened. They're going to see you as my son, not as some kid with pig poo all over him that's been a slave to someone. That's the love God has for us. And that's the love he shows to us. And that's the love that sometimes we just cannot accept. We just cannot believe that somebody would do that for us. We can't believe when we have done so wrong that God could forgive us. No way. You know, that's a twisted sense of pride for people to say that, because they're actually saying, I can out-sin what God can forgive. Now, repentance is involved in there, of course, and a change of mannerism and a change of life and conforming to Christ. But don't think you can out-sin the grace of God. All I've done, you just wouldn't believe what I've done. It doesn't matter what you've done. If you're willing to give it up, you can get forgiveness. So he goes on. The son just can't hardly believe this, and you get the idea that this fatted calf was laid up for just such an occasion. So he says, in verse 24, for my son was dead and is alive again and was lost, there's that word, lost, and is found, and it began to make merry. Now, that word actually in the Greek, if you want to look it up, is exactly the same as dead, was dead and is now alive. Sin and outside of Christ, we are dead. You know, we get the idea that we're alive and then we die. Death happened in the Garden of Eden, a spiritual death, that unless, if you continue on the course that you were set on in this life through the sin that you have committed, then the ultimate end is death. That's the death, that's the dead he was talking about. And he's resurrected. We brought him back. He's here again. He's back from the dead. And was dead and is alive, was lost, and is found. So now let's look at the other rebellious son just for a second. And now the elder son was in the field, and he came and drew nigh to the house and heard music and dancing. He'd been suspecting this. He knew what kind of father he was. And he just suspected that sorry boy had come back before long and begging his daddy out of more money. And he called out one of the servants and asked him, wouldn't go in, what these things meant. And the servant says unto him, thy brother has come, and thy father has killed the fatted calf, because he has received him safe and sound. That didn't sit well with brother at all. Now I want you to notice, he goes out to get two sons. Every time. He goes after them. You know, there's never a time when somebody has to go to them. The shepherd goes looking for the sheep, the woman goes looking for the corn, the father goes looking for the first son, and he goes out to get the second son. Always God coming to get. Because God is every one of these. God has come to get us. He came to get us at the cross. He is doing everything in his life he possibly can in order to get us still and to maintain us. This chapter, it shows the character of God, again, I'll say, better than any I have found in the Scriptures. In one place, the character of God. He is shameless when it comes to his love for his sons, for the sheep or what he was looking for that he had lost. He's willing to break any societal rules, pick up his coat and run when it's a disgrace to do so. He fell on his neck. That's the same word that is used in Acts chapter 2 when it says the Holy Spirit fell on them, enveloped them. That's the same word. And kissed his neck. Kisses, again, was a covenant symbol. Every one of these things means something, more so than we have time to talk about. But he says he was angry in verse 28 and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and entreated him. Wouldn't come in of his own choice, so he went after him. And he answered and said, and I'm going to interpret here just a little bit for you. And he answered, saying to his father, I mean, it's just too bad that you can't get the emotion out of written words. Because this young man is saying, with his teeth gritted, I have slaved for you all these years. Look at what he says. Lo, these many years I have served thee. That word is slave. I have worked my fingers to the bone for you. What have I got? Neither transgress I at any time thy commandments. Go to church every Sunday, you do everything you're supposed to do, but the love of God never was anything. You know, this boy was lost at home. Yet you never gave him to me, a kid, that I might make marry with my friends. Now, the significance behind that is he just gave a fatted calf to the other son. A kid was a goat. That was something you ate every day. That was just a common meal. That was something that was no significance to it whatsoever. And he says, you never even gave me a McDonald's hamburger, to put it in our way of speaking, to have a time with my friends. And I've been here with you all this time. Slaved myself, worked my fingers to the bone, and you've never given me anything. Now the response that the father gives him is astounding if you really put it in perspective to us as Christians. Here we are as members of the church and oftentimes don't realize what we have within our own grasp. When I realized what the father said to him, I couldn't hardly believe it. And he says, but as soon as this thy son, wouldn't call him his brother, which has devoured thy living with harlots, and as you kill for him the fatted calf. And he said to him, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. Now, when that dawned on me, and I went back to verse 12, put your finger back over there, and let's read that again. And the younger son said unto and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portions of good that falls to me. We have the idea that he just gave him what was coming to him. Look at the last part of the verse. And he divided unto them his living. He says, you don't understand. You could have had a fatted calf every day if you wanted it. It's all yours. I gave a third of it to him because that was the Levitical way. The younger of the two got a third and the older son got two-thirds of the inheritance. He says, I gave his portion to him and I'm living on your stuff. You could have done whatever you wanted. It was within your power. It's all yours. Whatever you see that I've got is every bit yours. It belongs to you. We don't understand that. God says the power of heaven is ours as his people. And we never seldom put it to use. We don't depend on it. We don't rely on it. We don't claim the promises that we have been given. And we're suffering because of that. We're failing to accomplish what we can and what we're capable of. We don't use our talents the way we should. We don't pull together as a group. And we don't work from that perspective. And we suffer as a result of it. And he says, you have been here all this time thinking that you couldn't have had a fatted calf and it's all yours. You misunderstood the whole thing. You could have had a fatted calf every day. We don't understand God. We don't understand him enough. But he said, it was me. It was necessary. It was important that we should celebrate. That's what Mary means. And be glad, for this thy brother, there's that same word. Was dead and is alive again. Was lost and is found. The celebration was over finding what was lost in every single situation. Rejoicing. Calling together. And you got to get that. You know, this is a story Jesus is telling us in a way that we can understand, but there is rejoicing in heaven. At one person, not a whole group, not converting a church or saving a nation, one person, there is rejoicing, celebration in heaven. That's no joke. If we knew how God really felt about us, there'd be no end to what we could accomplish. None whatsoever. We would be invincible because we have the power of God within us. God directs us, He guides us, He gives us instruction and direction, and we miss it all. We go around like that. And we worry about our job, and that's part of it. And we just focus on what's there for the minute, and we can't get the big picture. That God created us for a purpose. And when we are lost, either lost in the world or lost at home or whatever the situation is, lost means that we're not fulfilling the purpose we were designed for. The sheep was lost. It wasn't in the fold. It wasn't fulfilling its created purpose. The lady lost her coin. It went with her necklace. And it messed up the whole thing. And it was not only suffering, but it wasn't fulfilling what it was created for. The son was gone. Took what he thought would make him happy in life, riches, and lots of it. This guy was wealthy. He took a third of that and got what he thought would make him happy. It didn't. But it took that to make him realize. You know, if he'd never had that, and he never got the courage up to have told his father, I want what I've got coming to me right now. He'd have never got to know what kind of father he really is. He'd have never known. So his father gave it to him. He went and wasted it. And that was all a necessary part of coming to the knowledge of who his father really was. He'd have never known otherwise. You know, we have to take some stupid diversions in our lives sometimes to really realize who we are, who God is, who all the people around us have always been. And sorry to say, you know, I've done it myself. And I've seen people go all through their life and glad they have received salvation. I've had people, older people, too. A man was baptized at 75 years old, and he said, I wasted my whole life. He didn't waste his whole life, but he missed out on a lot of things. You know, but it took that life for that particular person. It took all that he had done to that point to make him realize who he was, and who he wasn't, and who God was, and who he wasn't. So those diversions, you know, sometimes are necessary. I told you when we started that God has a plan. He has an agenda, and that agenda is to get us from a lost condition to a saved condition and keep us there. Whatever it takes in between is what we need. The Bible says the Lord will supply for us every need. We think needs are new cars, new houses, new jobs, better jobs, and those type of things. And God thinks those diversions are what we need. He thinks we need enough money to go boil it and see that that ain't what it is. See that that has nothing to do with it. He thinks that we need sometimes to be able to fall on our face and be a feed pigs spiritually or physically. We may need a financial collapse. We may need something in our life to shake us up and say, this ain't worth that. That's what we need. And he knows how to give it to us. And it ain't harsh treatment when he does. You know, we look at that as being mean. Paul said, I counted every bit as dumb for the fact that I had been able to win Christ. And I think we will too. We may not be able to see that in this life, but I guarantee you, when we're standing before the presence of the Lord, and it took what we went through in life to get us to where we are, we will certainly be thankful of it. That's our lesson. If we can help you in any way, I've helped you to be able to see the love of God for you. And that He cares for you. He cares for everybody. No matter how we view people in the world and how lowly we think certain people are, those are precious people. Those are people that God is searching for, seeking for. They're lost and He's looking for them. And He has placed a value on them that is insurmountable. And we should help him work. That's what we're here for. We're here to teach and to show. He said, who's going to light a candle and put it under a bushel? If the candle's been lit inside of us, you know, it needs to provide light for those that are in this dark place, and it needs to be able to see to get out. And that is a privilege that we have of being part of God's family. It's not a duty. It is a duty, but, you know, if you look at it from that standpoint, it's a privilege. It's a perk of being a child of God. The ability to share with other people what we enjoy for ourselves. We can help you in any way. We've got a song for your convenience. We'd ask if you come to the family thing.